Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the show. And today we've got Ellis Taylor back. How you going, Ellis?
I'm good, mate. And you?
Yeah, good, mate. Thanks for coming back.
Oh, no worries. It's good. I enjoyed the last one.
Yeah, no, so did I, and so did the listeners as well. Those who are new to Ellis and didn't listen to the last show, Ellis is a numerologist, a tarot practitioner, hypnotherapist, an author, an experiencer. You cover a wide range of things. Now, we won't go too much into how you got or how all this was unravelled for you. Listeners can go back to the last show or the video that you're putting up, which will have the last show on it. But you cover a wide range of things. Now, how's things been for you lately? There's been much going on your way in terms of activity or things even over in the UK?
Well, there's been one or two things in the UK that I'm aware of. I've been sort of hunkered down doing other things at the moment to sort of keep in touch with many people. But there was some pilot who, a British Airways pilot who reported a UFO quite close to Heathrow recently. So we've had that. excuse me. And I know today they're having, I don't know whether you've heard of the Berrin Mountain case, where a UFO was supposedly crashed into a mountain in North Wales.
No, I haven't heard of that.
Yeah, it's quite a big case. But there's some kind of anniversary going on tonight up at Berrin, and quite a few people have gone to that, so we'll probably be hearing back from that. Richard D. Hall will probably have something on it on his TV show Rich Planet, and also Ben M. Lynn Jones on his Hapanwo radio show, or his YouTube channel will probably have something on it as well. But it's a very interesting case. A lot of military involved and all sorts of weird stuff going on with it as well. So that's on tonight. Personally, my most recent thing was this morning when I woke up. I thought I'd have a meditation, and as I was closing my eyes, I was sort of checking my aura before I did, and I noticed these they were black people all around my aura. And I realised straight away what it was. They were Obeah men and Duppies. Now, they're Caribbean characters. That's the name for their demons and wizards and things like that. The Duppies are the demons, and the Obeah men are the wizards. And anyway, they were around my aura with I think probably jaguar fur skins on and shaking rattles and all sorts of things, and a couple of bones are flying around, and it seemed as if they were trying to get to me. And the funny thing was that very recently I've had quite a lot of activity on a couple of pages on my website that refer to Dominica in the Caribbean, and I've got a friend who comes from Dominica and another friend who comes from Barbados. And some of the information that I had for those two articles actually came from these two friends. I think I might have upset somebody. And if this is, you know, as if they've sort of come to sort of go after me. But the other one is that one article is called Sukuyan, which is their name for witches that shapeshift. Apparently the Sukuyan first started in the Caribbean when the French got to the Caribbean, and according to the Dominicans, the French aristocracy, or some of them anyway, used to shapeshift, and people used to see them do it. And they used to said that they'd come out of their skins. And then, of course, they bred with the local population, and the Sukuyan kept going. And, yeah, it's still a very well-known thing and quite well-feared in the Caribbean, the Sukuyan. But I think that's what was trying to have a go at me today, but they got kind of their marching orders, and but that was quite an interesting thing to happen.
Yeah, I had some weird activity just after I emailed you last night. I had the cord behind the fridge in the wall. It was sort of getting picked up and smacked back down. And the area's only about that wide. But I was even turned trying to figure out what the hell was making that noise. And I've turned around because I had one of the lights on in the laundry and I could see the cord going like... This is sort of just a high strangeness factor, you know, that happens all you know, very occasionally around here anyway. So it's weird. Yeah. With the French people you were just talking about that used to shapeshift, was there any record of what... Or anything written down of what they actually shapeshifted into, or it was just basically saying that they'll change form?
What did they turn into? I know they used to turn into, like, sometimes an old woman would turn into a young woman and a young woman would turn into an old woman. I remember that. Yep. But I think they had quite a few different characters they'd shift between.
Yeah,
sometimes into other into animals as well, but yeah, it's quite a, you know, they're quite up with all this sort of stuff in the Caribbean. You know, they recognise this stuff as being a reality and not something that's kind of woo woo or whatever. So
they do that in most parts of the world, but you look at South America or even Japan. A lot of the countries there. They know that this is going on, but they're like, we're from here. So they're a lot further ahead than, you know, England and Australia and the mainstream America in many ways. They accept it and know it's real, and a lot of them have witnessed it. So it's weird how that plays out. It's funny you brought that up, but with your experience, how you may have, you know, shaken a few things up, because I'll test your sense of humour here. Not all reptilians are bad in my own experience anyway, and I believe there's many levels of these self-service beings. You know, doing the manipulation behind the scenes or whatever, but those who know me well, I call, when I see some crazy stuff, the manipulation going on, I say, you know, stuff these reptilian dildo bangers, because we're all getting screwed by them and we don't even realise it. But there was a time when we were laughing hardcore and I was saying it every now and then, and I had a few interactions that weren't too nice with them, and I'm thinking, I just didn't think it was a coincidence that some of these things are rocking up. And I was thinking, I shouldn't be saying stuff like that because things were coming through like that. And something we all laugh about every now and then with that type of thing anyway. With your own experiences and just listening to some of the stuff you've done and watching it, I'm fascinated with how you articulate what's going on with you, with your experiences, whether it's floating up through the ceiling, being able to watch down on your place, and you're going up further and that type of thing, very much like myself with some of the experiences I've had. It's sort of in between the physical but yet the astral level. You know, sometimes it'll be an astral experience, sometimes it'll be a totally physical experience where whatever's popped down, sometimes it could be projection. There's many ways these experiences manifest and play out.
Yeah.
When it started out for you, did you think it was actual physical, or you knew there was a astral level to it, the interdimensional level? How was that sort of exposed to you? Because I must admit, in the beginning, I was a bit naive, I think, myself, because I was thinking this is... Because it was physical for me, but it's like later the astral level and the interdimensional level played out because they exposed it to me. It's like, I think that would have happened beforehand and since a kid because things had been happening younger, but it's like I wasn't perceiving it on these other levels.
Yeah, well, I think it's a combination of a lot of things and different encounters can be different than the last one. it's all just a matter of... energy being what should we say, deconstructed then. So that's why you can be bodily in one place and not there. Do you see what I mean?
Oh, exactly. So, yeah,
I know you're there. It's just some of these visitors are able to work with the energy fields so proficiently that they can either take you bodily or mentally and leave whatever they want to leave behind. They can leave nothing or look like nothing, because that's all we are, is energy field, isn't it?
Everything's energy.
So if they know what they're doing, you know, they can take our whole body, or they can just work with our mind, or they can work with our astral body, or whatever, you know. There's lots of different ways of doing it, but I've certainly remember all sorts of ways of being escorted from my room or escorted from wherever, you know. And some of them bodily. I remember that quite well. But the other thing that I've experienced as well, without any contact I'm aware of, because you're not always aware that something's happened, are you?
No.
But on a number of occasions, I've seen my body just shimmer and become like this intense white. Intense white. It's just a light. Then it's like a real bright, bright, bright light, and I don't remember that in conjunction with being taken, but I do remember, funnily enough, entering a craft and being like that. So, you know, that in between, you don't always remember. And that's interesting that you've had the same thing as well.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you a question too, which I will. There's been times where it's been exactly what you've said. Even recently, Christmas night, I slept on my mum and stepdad's porch at the bottom of Mount Buffalo until I got my tent set up, and there was a few crafts about that night, but when I've gone to bed, the entire, like, everything just lit up into what you just said, like a white light, and then I can't remember much, but it was funny, about a week later I spoke to two friends, which we've got a very strong connection, very similar experiences with the beings, and everything's just very similar. We all had a sore shoulder and a sore neck. And I was just thinking, this is just tripped out, because I hadn't spoken to him for a week. It was the exact same night. The question I was going to ask is, I've had that, you know, the white light experience again, but beforehand, I noticed a very similar to a ringing in the ears, but it sounded like a tone or a frequency, and I've started to vibrate. Has that ever happened before, the white light experience?
Yeah,
popped up somewhere else, and I can remember what happened, and then that happened again to bring me back. That I started to hear the tone and then vibrate again. And then it was like, I don't know, as if a white light started from my... It seemed like it came out from me and then around me at that time, the second time. But so you've had that tone, frequency, and the buzz as well.
Yeah, well, in the beginning, mate, was the word, which is what it's talking about. It's sound. It's sound that they use to adjust the frequencies, from my understanding. So you'll hear these tones, which our scientists and ne'er-do-wells in the black ops, etc., well understand these days of working with. So, yeah, definitely.
Well, if you can do that by sound and vibration, you'll be able to manipulate the mass or energy, because everything's energy. So they'll be able to, if they know how to direct it to wherever they've got to go, or who to direct it at, or what object, that's where that comes into play. Have you had many experiences with the Black Ops or My Lab sort of experiences on top of what you've gone through?
I'm sure I have, Pete, but none that I can really say for definite.
Yeah.
I don't think. Not that I can think of at the moment, anyway. But certainly a couple of things, there's a suggestion of it, quite a strong suggestion of it. The first one that I think may have had something to do with that, was when, back in about the 1960s, I think it was, about 1960-ish, when I was with a load of friends down in the fields quite close to where we lived. And all of a sudden, there was this helicopter there, this dark helicopter. And we didn't see it come. We didn't see it arrive. It wasn't there when we looked before. And didn't hear it. But we looked around and there it was. And it was only about 50 yards away. And we were kind of looking at it. And the door opened. And these two tall guys walked straight out of it. They had blonde hair. And they were dressed in kind of flying jackets. Excuse me. And they walked out of the helicopter bolt upright. Right? None of this crouching and hair blowing everywhere and all this stuff. They just walked straight out of the helicopter. And walked up to us. And they addressed me and one other kid particularly. And they said something like howdy or something like that. And we straight away realized that they were American accents. And because the reason why we recognized them is because on the TV in those days, cowboy and Indians were famous. Favorite sort of programs. And also a couple of weeks beforehand we'd had a load of American Air Force personnel come and teach us how to play softball. So excuse me, so we recognized the accent as American anyway. These two came up and said howdy, and I said to me and my friend, do you want to go for a ride? And that's the last thing we can remember. Now, if that happened to you, Pete, you would tell everybody, wouldn't you? It'd be so fantastic a thing to happen, wouldn't it? That you'd just tell all your friends and tell everybody. And
right now, I'll hold back because I've had a lot of. A few my lab experiences, but I think as a kid I would.
I was only about 7 or 8.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's what I was saying. Yeah, as a kid I definitely would in that state. But
we never even mentioned it. We never even talked to each other about it. And over the years, that I kind of remembered now and again, but I could never get past whether I went. I never knew where I went. I didn't know what happened after they asked us if we wanted to go for a ride. And anyway, we never told a soul. And then sort of a long time afterwards, about 30 years, I think, I moved into this village. And I was driving past the shop and I saw a friend of mine go into the shop. And this was the friend who'd been with me when we were asked if we wanted to go for a ride, the other kid. And anyway, I waited for him to come out, and he actually lived in the village as well. So I said, well, we'll go for a pint at the pub. And so we did. We were at the pub a couple of nights later, I think. And when I was standing there, I remembered the helicopter incident. And I said, hey, do you remember that helicopter when we were kids? He said, yeah, he said. I haven't thought about that in years. He said, what happened? I said, well, I was going to ask you. I said, what can you remember? He said, well, I remember him asking if we wanted to go for a ride, but I can't remember anything else. And then a number of years after that, I was in another pub in a place called Headington. And the landlord of that pub was another kid who was with us. And I remembered it again, and I said, hey, Nick, were you with us when the helicopter was there? He said, yeah. I said, well, what happened? He said, I don't know, probably ran away, didn't we? Now, that's nonsense, isn't it? I mean, you would remember everything, wouldn't you? You just wouldn't forget it, would you?
Yeah.
It's such an incredible, fantastic experience. But the fact that we'd had military men come to the school a couple of weeks beforehand, and these guys get out of the craft, they got American accents.
So those dudes that rocked up, those dudes that rocked up to your school, they were American Air Force.
Yeah.
See, that just doesn't sound right to me. Like, I know that's what happened, but there's, you know, you'd think it'd be the country, whatever you're in, that the, you know, your own Air Force rather than.
Oh no, there was a lot of local bases then. A lot of bases, was there?
Oh, I guess you've got the like the Rendlesham Forest incident. You've got the UK and American.
Yeah. But I remember these guys. I remember that time when they came to school quite well. I can remember them showing us how to play softball. And I remember one of them having sitting me on his lap and putting his cap on me and all that kind of stuff, you know. Yeah, I just remember it really well. But the other thing is, you see, Pete, how could they walk bolt upright out of a helicopter without their hair blowing? Without having to crouch down. See, for ages after that, I used to, when I saw it on the TV, people coming out of a helicopter, I used to say whoever I was with, oh, you don't need to do that. It doesn't do that. You can walk straight out. That's what I thought, you see. But you can't. You can't. And, yeah, just really strange. But then Mary regressed me on that as well. And, I don't remember the details that came out. I mean, it's in her book, yeah. If the regression was not a screen memory or whatever, then that was actually a craft.
Yep.
So, I don't know. You know, it's another puzzling thing, isn't it?
Well, that's the other
thing. You never
quite
know how many skins you got to take off to get to the truth, do you? So.
Exactly. Yeah, there's lot to do with projection and screen memories and that type of thing where it screws with your head and you learn to sort of just go so far sometimes. And you do try to peel a couple of layers and then you think you've got it, but you still don't ever exactly know. I know that with myself is that... yeah, it's where the projection, one group of the beings that come here, they've projected a lot in front of me, and scenarios and things that's going on with myself in the bigger picture. But after that, I thought, well, how do I know that most of the interactions haven't been projection? And then it goes into the astral, side of things, and then the physical side. It's like, what's going on here? But I think we learn more about ourselves and a little bit about the collective when you go into your experiences, because it seems to be not individual, but you find your sort of part in things. And I think out of body, in a state in between lives, naturally, we've got an idea and we can perceive more in that state rather than when we're in a container or in a life. And it's sort of frustrating, because I know that out of body and in those states, I got more of a idea of how this is all playing out, my part, and why things are the way they are, although there's always mysteries. But that's where we're limited when we're in this container, absorbing things with especially what our mind, our brain sees what it wants to see. And that's why they're able to put the screen memories in, and we sort of just up in the air on what's going on. With yourself, and I love the work that you do with the symbolism. We're talking before we got on the air of how in depth you look at symbolism, synchronicities. How did this get drawn to you? How did you start picking up on this and go into that direction? Was there a certain thing where you thought, geez, like you picked something up and you were just absolutely fascinated? Or was it just something that came to you naturally, straight up, that you just started doing it and you didn't know why?
Excuse me, Pete. I've got a bit of a cough. Sorry.
You're all right, mate.
Well, I can remember being a little kid and doing adult jigsaws and I was always very good at putting things together in patterns and recognizing what goes where. I was also very good at finding things. Born with that ability, I suppose. But then the actual working with symbolism started when I was doing some psychic detective work, and I think I might have discussed this before, actually.
Yeah, was that in Perth?
Yeah, where I got these psychic information that this girl was missing in this. What I was getting is that she was in a well near rocks, and I'm pretty sure I discussed it in the last one, so I won't go into it too deep. But yeah, it turned out that she was in a suburb called Wellard near Rockingham. So that was clearly a symbolic psychic message, and so I resolved then to look at symbolism a lot deeper than I did, because I wasn't going to the, you know, what could be the meaning of these things. It's not necessarily what's before you, it's what underlays, you know, what you're being told. So that's what sent me off looking into symbolism a lot more deeper than I had done before. And excuse me. The numerology was just something that fitted in well with that, I suppose. It wasn't something I consciously decided to do. It's something that inspired me when I really looked at it, and it all sort of goes together very well, you know, because, you know, the symbols we use for articulating, well, to literalize our you know, our sounds, our symbols. So, excuse me, it goes together very well. And it takes you into all sorts of areas, mate, because really what you're doing is looking at consciousness and fields of consciousness and patterns of consciousness and all this kind of stuff. So what you can do with it is, I don't think it's limited. I really do think it can help in loads and loads of ways. I've sort of been doing a bit of research over the years, a little bit here and there, of looking at serious crimes. Now, because like attracts like, we all are attracted to the people that have got the same energy fields as us, right?
Yes.
So our friends, even our enemies, our partners, have got the same numbers as us in our numerological or numerosymbological charts. So therefore, it makes perfect sense to me, and so far, it seems to be working out that way. The more I look at it, when someone is a victim of crime, the perpetrator will have the same numbers as them. Not going to say every single number is the same, but there'll definitely be correspondences between the two numbers. Now that's got to be a major help for crime solving. For a start, you can see, say, for instance, the the victim's got 7, 4, and 3. Well, the person who's perpetrated the crime may well have 7 and 4, or they might have 7, 4, and 3 themselves. But that cuts down the amount of people that could have something to do with it, you see. So if you had a load of people that could have done it, you look at those numbers and you can whittle out who hasn't. Do you see what I mean?
I know exactly. Why I'm laughing too is only you could pick this up. This is what I was saying before we got... It's like, how do you think of this? And they, you know, like we're saying, you know, we look at some things, but you go, you see more connections. How did you think of that? Or how did that come into light for you when when you looked at that possibility and then you've seen that this is common? Because
it just makes sense, doesn't it, really? I mean, it's one of the laws of our realm, that like attracts like. So
yeah, that's what makes sense to me when you said that.
It's got to be, hasn't it? It's got to be something. And the different crimes are related to different number patterns anyway, so that makes another field of study that you can look into. excuse me. But what it will do, I mean, if I had... You know, if I was set the task of finding out who's what, I can't tell you who is the perpetrator from that.
You can just tell their numbers.
But I can tell you who is involved in that. Now, that involved in that could be the copper in charge of the investigation. He would have to have the same numbers, right? And maybe even people that are wrongly accused of it, because they're drawn into that same, you know, this vortex of energy that's using that particular energy. So I can't say, oh, you know, that was Fred Bloggs did that, but I'd be able to see why they're involved in it, because their energy is the same. But it's still going to be a really useful tool for crime investigation, I would have thought.
What I'm understanding is there are, I think this is how it is in the States. I know a few psychics that have done work in the States for law enforcement. What I understand is that they can be inundated with a lot of psychics saying this and that. I don't think they can use the actual... What you could say later on is correlating evidence. Once, you know, it's found out to be they're right, and then they backtrack and how they'll put onto it, they can't go into it that way. But I think that they're allowed by the department to use the psychic if the police force or, you know, the sheriff's whatever choose or go to that psychic, which I think is how it works. But there's a lot of stories and, you know, as I said, actual psychics I've spoken to that have worked with police, and you're another one in that now. I think there's four all up, which is sort of fascinating each time of how, at least, you know, the police, I think, you know, if it was 50 years ago, they would laugh and go, you know, wouldn't waste their time, but it seems to be more and more now. There are investigators and detectives open-minded enough to at least listen.
Yeah. But, see, numerosymbology and numerology is not psychic.
Yes,
when you do, you know, a consultation for somebody, you get psychic stuff come in with it.
Yeah.
But the actual process is a science, because it's very, I mean, it is an investigative tool. That's what it is, and that's what science is. So
something you can repeat over and over, and it's got the method. Yeah.
I mean, you can tell the nature of somebody by numerosymbology and numerology. You just can, you know, there's no argument as far as I'm concerned. I've looked at thousands of people and, you know, it's not as if I'm just sort of looking at half a dozen or something. I've looked at thousands and it's truly a remarkable tool. And when you realise that all it's doing is looking at the frequency of people, you know, their frequency patterns, etc., then it becomes less woo-woo. It becomes more comprehensible to people who are kind of stuck on microscopes and test tubes. But it is absolutely brilliant. And but then, you know, it's another tool that can be used, and when investigators get to a point where, you know, they've done all they can, there's nothing, they don't know where else to go, I think that all these things are valid to be used. And you know, really all that the public wants is for the perpetrators to be caught and put away. So
yeah,
whatever means that takes, so long as it's not you know, immoral, then I think is worth looking at and using. Yeah. I mean, I still get psychic stuff going on. There was this poor little kid who's come up in the news in recent times, actually, last week or so, I think. Little lad, I think he was 3 or 4 or something. And I mean, I got psychic information on that, but the thing is, where do you take it? I mean, you need to build a relationship up with a policeman or whatever, and the police need to build a relationship with you so you can trust each other, you know. And that's something that's earned respect. So yeah. if you can earn respect with somebody and they kind of value what you give them, and you know that they're gonna, you know, treat it properly and efficiently, etc., then that's got to be a good partnership, you know, to help in these things. I mean, it panned out. What came to me is exactly what happened. So I mean, they found the person who did that, and I already had that, but who was I going to tell? I don't know who did tell. I mean, I told a few people that I know, but I didn't go telling the police or anything. They'd taken no notice. So that's where we're at the moment. But it's still, you know, I contend if someone's got the ability to get information, then why don't they use them? I mean, there are a lot of people out there who waste police time. There's no doubt about that. And nobody's always right. And nobody's always right in anything. So, you know, everyone's just doing their best. But it's another tool that can be used. So why not?
Why not? That's right. Now, with numerology, do you have your own spin or take on, or your own developed style of how you do it? The stitching?
Quite a few different ways. I've got different formulas and the way that I look at them as well. I look at the shape of letters and what the letters are made up from, and the numbers are made up from, their positions. Lots of different ways, lots of different things, actually. And it's something I never stop working on, really. It's I'm always open to, you know, fresh ideas and whatever comes in. But I find it very, very accurate. Very.
Do you do the same with healing, and whether it's hypnosis or tarot? Do you have your own spin in the way you do things that you don't know why you do it that way, but it you just know how to do it and it does work? Because I found that with me, especially with healing, and I've talked to other experiences where they've said they've been able to, and I know, like, after talking to them and witnessing it, I know that, you know, it's for real, and it's for real with me, but I've noticed that if you can do something and you don't know how to do it, but you do it, it works, I think you're on the right path, but there's sort of no method to the madness. It just, it works, and that's where I sort of pick up on the real deals from not, because there's no given manual. We're sort of working our own manual going along, but we do what works once we trial and error. And that's what I found very... It's just funny that, you know, that's the way it is for you too, because it's been the way for me. I don't know how
You've
I
gone,
do.
You've gone, Pete.
Have I gone? Is it back? Hello? Hello? It's cutting out, is it, again?
Yes. Yeah, hello? It kept cutting out then. Yeah.
Back now?
Yeah, you're back.
Yep. So with the symbolism and numerology, is what you're saying, like we spoke in the first episode about how there's energy and intent behind the symbols. They've got their own vibration, own intent. So when you do the numerology, the numbers that come up are there would be energy signature traits independent from each, like each number would be different. Is this where it comes in and you have the formula for, you can tell personal traits, things about whatever you're doing it about? Is that how it works, by the symbol has intent energy, then you'll get different traits with different numbers, putting them together, and you sort of get a pattern of who people are, what their personal traits are?
The thing is, Pete, I mean, with loads of things and certainly including numerology and neurosymbology, is, as they say, we stand on the shoulders of giants. the meanings of the numbers are well recognized and anciently known. Yes, there are a few additions I've made to some of the meanings of the numbers, but that's through my own observations. But the main body of the meanings of each of the numbers has been passed down to us for thousands of years. It's a very, very ancient science. And so, you know, anybody can go and learn what is conventional numerology. And you know, I mean, it's okay, it's good. But for me, I felt immediately that there was more to it, and there certainly was. And I've been fortunate enough to been handed psychically then the extra stuff that I work with now, and it continues to come in. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a fascinating subject. And like for instance, people like you and I, we'll have number 16 and number 7 in our charts, and we'll have number 4.
I always remember the 4. Okay. Yeah,
but both of them,
and it comes up over and over.
Yeah, both of them will be in our charts, and of course, because 7 and 4 makes 11, we'll have 11, and you know, that's something that's common, and that's something that every experiencer will share. That's because it has to, you know.
No, that's
so 7 is
that's cool.
7 is 7 is, you look at the symbol for 7, Pete, right? Yeah. Because we write from left to right, right? Left is regarded as the past and right is the future. Okay. So if you look at 7, we're going from the past to the future and delivering to the present, right? It's coming down to the present.
Yeah.
Yeah. So therefore, 7 is the number of psychics and prophecy and mysteries and the mystical and, you know, all of that sort of stuff, and science. So, I mean, scientists will be 7s because that's what science is about, chasing mysteries, you know. It's just different areas of mysteries. They're looking at more mundane things, most scientists, whereas other scientists, parascientists or whatever, are looking at more esoteric subjects. But it's still science, and it's a 7 thing, and that's what we do as well. I mean, when you're investigating anything, that's a science, you know. That's what science is. It's investigation. So,
tapping back into that ancient knowledge.
Yeah, and then 16, I call that the God punch. When you've got 16s, you have sudden and dramatic incidents in your life, and you're also the person who hands out sudden and dramatic incidents to other people too. I mean, now and again a 16 will find themselves blurting out something to somebody when they didn't mean to say it, it comes out because 16's are channels, you see. It's something needs to be said, you're not saying it, but it's coming through you, and you're that person needs to hear it, whether they like it or not. And you thought, well, shit, what did I say that for? You know, but it needed to be said. And once something's said, it can't be unheard, can it? So, you know, it's just kind of inspiration, really, and helps people. It's kind of a messenger number, but it can also be mightily powerful and destructive as well if it's used for other purposes. And it is, you know. I mean, the dark side uses 16 in that side of the fence. So because it has got this ability to sort of actually dramatically cause chaos, because then it has to be built up again, you see. So it's the 16 in the tarot. It's the lightning struck tower. It's the down comes the lightning and blasts the tower apart. You know, the tower is self-satisfaction and ego and feeling like you're better than everybody else and all that kind of stuff and false securities. And so, yeah, that's the 16.
What's the difference when you look into it? Like, oh, I've looked a little bit into it, nothing like what you do, which is, you know, very in-depth. What's the difference between the birth date and what you get for the actual name? You eventually combine them from what I understand. But what's behind doing it? Like, is there any difference between... are they separate? Is there different meanings between the birth date... which, if there is, I would think it would go into planetary and how things are in the cosmos at that time when birth as well, or when coming in, or is there anything to do with that at all? Because what I ask is, it's like with the Illuminati or the Elite or those doing the rituals, they do it on certain dates. Or supposedly.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. Okay, there's quite a few different questions in that, but... your name, right, when you think about it, we're an energy field. Our name is what we're broadcasting. Yeah? So you're broadcasting the frequency of Peter or Pete or whatever. Now that's going to attract that same frequency back at you. All right, so your name gives you your lessons in life, yeah? It's your experiences and your letters, your experiences and lessons. So your full name is giving out all those frequencies that are held within all those letters and numbers and combinations of them, etc. They're all coming back at you. So you learn from them. You learn how to deal with them. So you learn something from those experiences. So... it's what you broadcast and what you receive is your name.
Yep.
Yeah, or your names are. The name you use most is obviously the one that you're going to get the most lessons from. And then your birth date. Now, what you've got to remember is that the calendar we use is not natural. It's a contrived mechanism.
Yeah,
it's the New Year's Day is different in lots of different places in the world. It's also changed frequently over the millennia.
Yeah,
so you know, it's just been, for whatever reason, they've decided that first of January is New Year's Day, and that's when everybody kind of celebrates and puts all their energy into it. And because they do that, and because it's subconsciously into every human being on the planet, and the fireworks go up and celebrations, and everybody celebrates this date that the Roman Catholic Church has just kind of pulled out of a hat. They're actually honouring the Roman Catholic Church.
Right? When they're doing it, they don't realise.
Yeah, that's what they're doing. They're praising that. And not only that, but also the energy and the entities behind that.
Yes. I've seen it lately with the Sydney New Year's. You had the Illuminati eye on the bridge. And I was just going, oh, my God. And there's like a million people celebrating. I'm thinking these guys are getting a hell of a lot of energy tonight.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's magic, isn't it?
I was telling a lady that, and she was blown out. I said, you don't know what you guys were doing.
And Sydney, with its rising and setting sun bridge, and Luna Park sat right next to it, and you know, anyway, so these numbers that not only are the frequencies that they describe, the symbols they use for the frequency they describe, being designed by priests, then not the Roman Catholic Church on this occasion, but they've sort of designed it a little bit and passed it on. This is kind of ancient stuff, you know. We're going back to Asia, etc., aren't we, with the origins of the letters, but of the number figures. But even then, I mean, they've changed over time, you know, they've been mucked around with. But those numbers that are placed, like why is one represent that particular frequency, and why does two represent that particular frequency, and blah de blah, all that kind of stuff. Well, when you look at the symbolism of the letters, you can see actually what they're doing, and they're manoeuvring people to think in certain ways on a subconscious level, and then they apply them to the letters. But there's a little bit of a mismatch with some of the letters, which because there's a mismatch, subconsciously you get a contradiction. And when you've got a contradiction, you get confusion. And confusion is a hypnotic technique, you see. So yes. So it all works to, you know, get your mind in this confused state where, da-da-da-da, here comes the Roman Church to help you, fellas. You know, we can sort out for you. We can get between you and God and all this kind of stuff, and there you go, that's what's happened. So that's the way it
is. That's the way it works. I read somewhere too, correct me if I'm wrong, but the reason why there's, you know, when you go to the store and buy most things, not all things, you've got like $1.99, $2.99, and that the nine's put in there to draw, I think it's something to draw you to buy or to get attracted to that number, like when you're looking at the price tag. Is there anything behind that? Because I thought about it, and I thought, well, there is a lot of bloody things that I buy, and you know, they've got 99 cents on it at the end.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't given that a great deal of thought, Pete, but it makes sense because 9 is the number of it's not the end, even though it's the last of the numbers. Number 9 is the last of the numbers, but it always starts again, doesn't it? So nine is like midnight. Then is, you know, it's neither the beginning nor the end. It's the in between, and so therefore you'll come back again. It's like you'll return again. So it encourages people to either buy something else, or come back to that shop or whatever. That's what 9 would do, is that sort of thing.
Now, on your website, it's written, if it's, correct me if I'm wrong, you're an interdimensional traveller or you have those experiences. Mm-hmm. I'd like to get you to go into that, if you can, a little bit. I know what you're talking about, but just for the listeners, and yeah, we'll just see where we can go from there, because I find, when I read that, I was like, you know, it's just, I know what you're talking about. Besides past lives being in other worlds, which I do have recollection of, you have the aspect of whether through meditation or these experiences with these beings, which I find they go hand in hand. You do go to these other, not just planets or other galaxies or whatever you want to call it, but other frequencies, I'd say even other universes. How did these
other times as well?
Yeah, exactly. There's no time in that state. It's just you can pop, and I know from remote
other eras, all sorts of things. Yeah.
Yeah. For me, how it played out was, I started to do the military version of remote viewing at the same time of when I got into meditation. My opinion of that today is that if I didn't do those two at the same time, and I didn't plan on this, this is just how it worked out. And it was my dad was a cop for 38 years, and he was blown out because he was giving me targets, and he made sure I had no idea what the hell it was. Today I don't do that so much because for some reason I can do that, and I don't even really do targets now. I do a little bit of reading, but it's more like I believe where I'm meant to go, whatever information or interactions I'm meant to have, that will happen. So whether it's astral traveling, communication, downloads, or experiences with the actual beings, when I go to meditate now, I don't have a set agenda. It's like whatever happens is meant to happen at that time. But I believe that doing remote viewing and the meditation at the same time opened me way up more to going into the interdimensional aspect, appearing in places that crystal caves and just weird planets that look nothing like here. I don't know how it plays out now, because in the beginning I thought it was the physical aspect. Sometimes I could actually see my body. It was as real as sitting here talking to you now. Other times, it wasn't. It was like a different form of myself, or there wasn't even me. It was like there was some form of my conscious being that I still don't know how I see stuff. I said this to Rodwell not long ago. I could see the craft, everything, but I was a white light being. I don't have these physical eyes, but yet I was perceiving in human terms of what I was seeing. I could still see it. I think there was a lot more conscious barrier where I wasn't really seeing it. I was all with one of where I was at. That's how, and I could tell what everything was. How did this interdimensional aspect for yourself come into play, where you realise you were doing the travelling the other places? How did it play out for you, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, very similar to you, Pete, really. But I can't tell you when the first time happened. I think it's probably before I can remember. But I can definitely remember things from around about 3-4 years old, where I would be in a different place than where I should have been. I can remember being, my nan's in Oxford when we got here from Australia. I can remember being there and in the house, and she lived like on the edge of the actual town, but I can remember closing my eyes and waking up in a cornfield with haystacks, and this sort of cottage, might have been a farmhouse, I don't know, but a building anyway, and pigsties and things. It was like a real mixed farm with all sorts of different things, and playing there. And then going back, and I don't know how I got there. I don't know how I got back, but then I was back at home. And it wasn't like a dream. It was real. It was, yeah. I mean,
do you think it was another time? I guess it's just theorising, but yeah.
I really don't know. It's too long ago.
Yeah.
Really. But I used to often see ghosts in there. I mean, I saw an airman walk down the stairs and through the wall, and that apparently was one of my auntie's ex-boyfriends who died during the war, by the description I gave. And but then, yeah, I mean, they just continued all my life. I just do it. I mean, I occasionally I've sort of willed myself and gone somewhere, but it can just happen. One really fantastic thing that happened in recent times, or one of them, I just got up in the morning, went to the computer to do something, sat down, and immediately right next to me was a warrior woman, and off we went, and we were at the top of the mountain behind where I lived, and I wrote about it, but just an absolutely extraordinary powerful experience. I had some kind of baptism, and there were priestesses, and there was the goddess. There's all sorts of things went on, and I was bodily. It wasn't a mental thing. It was bodily.
I know exactly what you're saying. Do you feel that fabulous experience was like a type of initiation, or because you were talking about the baptism and that? What do you feel that was about?
I don't think that I would say it was actually a baptism, but it was something in between a baptism and a rite of passage. It was kind of that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It was almost like I'd actually achieved something, and I was being, yeah, I mean, it was something that I'd achieved that was being the ceremony was about. And yeah, it's extraordinarily powerful, people. Extraordinarily powerful. Yeah, I wrote about it on my website. If anyone wants to have a look, it's called what is it? The Bow. Something about Bow. I can't think at the moment what it is.
Oh, there'll be a link to all your websites with this anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know what you mean. Like, that's been how it is for me, where these beings have appeared, next minute you're somewhere else. And my story's sort of been tripped out because it was stuff that I didn't know whether to come forward. Like, one of the beings, she's actually a light being and she doesn't have a name. The reason why I call her she is because she originally appeared as a beautiful female woman with huge eyes. And she was in sort of like a turtleneck top. From here down, there were sort of patterns. After a while, she'd wear different things, but it was like it was made out of wetsuit material. And originally, she said she's from the... I've got a connection to Orion. I can actually remember before coming here, and half of me is still there, which goes very complicated. It's not complicated, but for the average Joe, it is. But what got me was this lady was telling me she's from the Pleiades, but later I found out she's a light being and that she's from a star there. And I'm thinking, you're from a star, and that's why she said you wouldn't understand in the beginning. And that goes against the grain, because once I did research going, am I nuts, what the hell's going on? And then I go, oh, yeah, there is beings from this area, but then I find out they're not what I was seeing. And it's like I'm the only person, recently spoke to others that there's traits that they would not know because I haven't put that information out. So there's things that I can tell, and she said there would be others. But, you know, the common thing is, and I can remember being in the Pleiades with beings like us, a beautiful environment, but then this was totally different ball game. And I'm thinking, people are going to think I'm nuts because I'm saying something's coming from a star for starters. And she's shape-shifting, and I still haven't found anybody public, except the Aboriginals had some stories similar about light beings from the Pleiades, which I found out about a year after I came out, because a friend of mine near Dunedoo at the time sent me something on it, and I knew it was real, because nothing bad came, and stuff was happening how my life changed positively. That's how people said, how do you know if it's good or bad? And that's how I could tell. Things went in a totally positive direction. But it gave me... It let me know that I wasn't nuts because I found, you know, that the Aboriginals were speaking about the same thing. And then, but if you go into Billy Meyer and all these other people, it's, you know, just a physical type. Some of it, you know, if it doesn't resonate with me, it doesn't resonate with me. But that's why I was a bit afraid, because that isn't common. That's out there. Like, you know, it's not normal. For what is normal to start off with, but the preconceived notion of, you know, what people think the Pleiadians or whatever it is. But yeah, there's been times I've been taken to like a light world as well, where it's just pure light, but you could see these beings in robes. Crystal Cave, these beings called the Elohim. There's 12 of them I know all up in their council, but they're like see-through, light blue, aqua blue beings with swirls of light through them. They're humanoid, but I've seen them go from orbs to manifest into that form. And this is where I was just interested to hear that, even just what you said about how, you know, that worry being popped up and then you're there, you know, on top of this mountain in your area. I had similar stuff like that, and it's tripped out. Like, it's a lot to take in, but it's like, you know, this reality anyway. It's because we've all experienced it, I guess.
Yeah, it's true. But that, where I was taken to on that occasion, I knew it was that place behind where I lived at the top of the mountain. But it didn't look the same. It was the same place, but it didn't look the same. It was that place in another dimension.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
I know it's, what you mean. Yeah.
It was a very, very sacred place. And I mean, I treat it with huge reverence, that area. It's it's just phenomenal. It is very sacred, very feminine, and it's a stronghold of goddess energy. Absolutely is. And it was all women there when I went, when I was taken there. It was warrior women, priestess, a goddess, no men. It was all women. And yeah, just fantastic. It's actually a birthing place. And there's stories about Jesus being born in Wales. That's one of the legends that goes around. Personally, I think it's their particular version of Jesus. You know, I think there's been confused over time. It's just another Messiah that, you know, there's been loads of them around the world. But if he was to be born anywhere, that's where he would have been born, I'm pretty sure of that. This character. But there's a guy actually in Australia who wrote a really good book. Tony Bushby.
Haven't heard of him. I wrote that down.
Tony Bushby, yeah. The publisher's up in Queensland. Can't think of the name of it. But if you look up Tony Bushby, you'll find it. But he's really gone into a lot of scholarship. He's gone into the Bodleian Library and the Vatican and all sorts for all his information. And fantastic book, just brilliant. I read it at Mary's actually, because she had it. I don't think she'd read it then. I think someone had given it her or something.
She'd have a hell of a lot of books, I think.
She probably hasn't even read it now. But but I thought it was fascinating, and I'd love to get a copy for myself. But yeah, I mean, he goes into that, how Jesus was a druid and all this kind of stuff. And yeah, why not? I mean, I don't see why not. Just for me, probably another, you know, another character, but just the version from Wales. But yeah, I recommend that book. All right. In fact, I saw on Amazon the other day that it's on for $2 or £2 or something. So have a look on there.
Yeah, good price. Yeah, pick that up. Yeah.
But it's fantastic. It's really good book. I really enjoyed it.
Well, you see how, I personally, I've had experiences with some of these ancient saints and sages, and Joshua, I knew it was communicated to me, and even other beings. I don't see Jesus as Jesus, but Joshua, and it's totally, there's only a few people that their experiences have sort of been pretty close to mine, and it wasn't, it's sort of more, what I understand is a lot of these ancient scripts, or what we think are ancient scripts that have been manipulated, the true meanings of us being able to empower ourselves and the real ancient knowledge has been manipulated to trap us. And then you go from, I guess, Sumer, which I believe there's many civilizations even before going right back on Earth's, you know, what we think is history, and we're talking beforehand about the other dimensions and what's going on, you know, throughout everywhere. But it's as though, from my understanding, is that this is all being planned by, I guess you'd say, these beings in the self-service, where you've got Sumer going through to the Roman Empire, spreading out throughout royalty, coming through eventually to the Americas and Australia. This form of manipulation where I say to people, and they go, how could all this be real that you're saying, blah, 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 and it's like, don't believe me, but if you look at how well this is being done, it's like they knew 10,000 years ago where we would be by the year 2000. 100 years beforehand, we will start up an education system with the English language mainly. You still got the other languages, but basically we're going to brainwash you with what we want you to know without you knowing it. So by the time people start to work it out, we're going to look like nuts because the plan has been so well planned. It's not just like an overnight thing, you know, 1,000 years ago they planned this. This is going right back that they knew. And you can see, or well, we can see, how this has been played out and what's been placed upon the people. And it's, you know, from what I know, a lot of these religious figures, saints or sages, some of them aren't real, some of them are. The teachings have been manipulated because they couldn't hide the real stories of the real people, so therefore they'll alter them because it was already around by word of mouth. What better way to manipulate that story where people are going to go by that, you know, give us 10% of your shit every week, you know, like that some of these churches do. And here you're meant to be helping the poor and the homeless and all that type of thing. But you can see how there'd be a lot in that Vatican library, a lot of ancient knowledge that they're keeping for themselves, mm-hmm. and they're misusing it. And that's what fascinates me, is how well this is being planned.
Well, the thing is, Pete, what you got to remember is that these entities live a very, 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 very long time compared to human beings. I mean, even the clues in the old Bobili, the Holy Bible, the people like Methuselah and all that, how long they live. But that was only a very short time compared to these entities. I mean, they can live for thousands of years. So, you know, it's just a blink in the eye of human life to them. So that they can have these agendas going on,
exactly.
You know, for whatever they want to do. And the other thing that because they know how to work with energy and frequency and all the rest of it, they can actually, the people they want to be in charge of kind of organizing and directing life on Earth, that they can revolve them into the same body.
Yeah. Yep.
Into another body. The same spirit or whatever into the same body. So you'll get, like, you know, people like the Queen Mother and Bushes and Rothschilds and all those sort of people. They just come back in another body and they carry on doing what they're doing. And so long as they're doing what's expected of them. So it ends up that we sort of are very limited because of the very short span of time that we human beings lifetime is very short and getting shorter.
Oh yeah, and that's what's playing.
And drastically so it will be as well. I think that we've probably come to some kind of climax in how long human beings will live, or the ones that are allowed to, you know, who are not wanted. You know, there's all sorts of things being done against us at the moment that's going to shorten our lives. And not only that, our ability to procreate, you know, sperm count in men is dropping like a stone and all sorts of things. So, and at the same time, they're making the oceans toxic, and you know, you make the oceans toxic, you make everything else toxic, because the rain gets it up and spreads it around the world, and you know, all sorts of things are going on. And Fukushima, I mean, that's just like a nightmare, that, but that's being kept quiet. But yeah, that's what's happening at the moment. But at the same time, you see, you've got this quite profound awakening. But it's being held back by all the mind control and all the toxic food and all the rest of it. It's holding people back from actually doing anything. But also this inability that people have to actually see and remember that their spirits experiencing a physical life in this world. And I wrote an article the other day, actually. It was another one of my channeled, hate that word, but there you go, articles. And that was about, it was called Thoughtlessness, and how the way to really improve matters. I mean, meditation and all that is cool. That's good. Yeah. But this is one step beyond. We're going to like an area where there is, you get to that place where there is no thought. There is no
nothing.
Hopes, dreams, wishes, nothing. And that's where people need to get to, because that place is perfection. And if you could get to that area, there's everything is restored, everything is mended.
And everything can be accessed.
And everything can be accessed.
I know exactly what you're talking about. there's a lot of people, because I'm a meditation teacher, I've got the certificate and that from others, but at the same time, I don't even use the technique I was taught.
Yeah, that's right. You don't need any of that because you've
exactly.
got that.
But what I worked out was that if you can work out how you perceive your thought, how you perceive sound, yes, it's hitting the ears and going into the brain, but how are you recognizing it consciously? And there was times where I was brought mm-hmm. back here. And when I was brought mm-hmm. back here, I was in that, what you're talking about, that nothingness. And anything can be, it's sort of like you could say God conscious, however you want to term it. But the mechanism...
Where miracles come from.
Yeah. But the mechanism I used was thought, because what I found was a lot of the meditation teachers and techniques are clear your mind. Nah. Think. Think where you think. Think how you perceive what you perceive. What happens is you go quiet enough and you think and use that mechanism of thought. It draws you back because you're wondering, how am I perceiving this? How am I even perceiving my own thought? And it brings you back and you go into that state. And that's what I use all the time. I go to source. And from mm-hmm. source, that's why I said to you, like how I said to you, that I'll do meditation and whatever's meant to come through will come through. But that's my main mechanism, my light switch, is going, using thought. How do I even perceive my own thought? And every time it drags me out. And that's beautiful that you've said that. And that's what came through when, you know, you use that word channeling, because... That I know exactly what you're saying, and a lot of people are manipulated. It's like, what better way to screw up people with meditation than tell them not to think? Because it's
the
opposite.
I think you have to be thoughtless. Personally, myself, Pete, I don't do it that way. I can just close my eyes and everything empties. I'm just in that place of no thought, absolute... you can tell you're there because there's nothing around it. It's just empty.
Well, it's using different mechanisms to get to the same place.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah, but I know exactly what you're saying, because that's where a lot of it happens for me now, whether it's doing CE5 work or, you know, whatever's going to come through. I use that plane... for whatever's meant to occur.
Well, we'll all have our own techniques for getting to things, because, you know, it all depends on what we've gone through in our previous incarnations and experiences, etc. But, you know, we're bound to have different ways of achieving it. But, you know, it's actually being in that place that's important. However you get there, you know, there's got to be different ways of doing it. It's same with everything. But it's actually getting to that place.
No, that's
the place where you need to be.
Yeah. The more of us that do it, you know, it's... But you're right with the, you know, the food contamination and what's going on with the environment, the rain, you know, the weather, circling and all that bull crap around that's going on that holding us back. The lengths that they've gone to just with whatever you eat now, whatever you drink, a lot of people on soft drink and the crap that's in that, it's just absolutely amazing the lengths that these... You know, and I see it as many levels of many beings behind this agenda too. I don't think it's just reptilian. I even think now that I think a large majority of these reptilian entities, they're even possessed by what you would call, you know, term Archon. But I think there's many, I think that's a blanket term for these entities at that level. So, like I know reptilians are real. I've had experiences with them. I've had three different types. All different. One race was really, they were pretty much on the same level of wanting to evolve because they've realised they've put themselves in a box. The others, not so much. But when you get behind these, you know, you go behind the Rothschilds and the Rock, you know, whatever, you go back, because humans couldn't do that. Or we think we're humans, we're actually spirit in the human body, but you just... You couldn't do, when you look at the manipulation and crap that humans have been put through. It's just, you know, it's absolutely disgusting, but
yeah,
there's many levels. And have you come across that yourself, that there's not just one thing behind what's going on, but many different levels of the manipulation, those beings behind what's occurring?
It's a thought form, yeah. It's a form of consciousness that doesn't actually ever materialize into anything.
Yeah, it goes up to that stage, yeah.
Yeah, it has no form. And that's what manipulates all everything that goes on as well. You know, that's where it all begins from. I call it the darkness invisible, but it's kind of got two aspects to it, and the destructive one and the creative one, because they work together. Definitely, absolutely, yes. I've seen different reptilians as well and different shapeshifters.
Do you have much experience with the shadow man? I've had different type and...
Yeah, and different heights and different widths and... Oh, dear, yeah.
Lots of different things. In the house, I'll get, like, remotes moving or phones, just stuff happening. And to me, my consciousness is telling me, like, there's many types of greys, as you probably know. There's so, like, you know, people go greys, well, it's like, which one, but... It's just psychically, I know, connecting with that energy now, that, like, when that happens, it's usually not, it could be me doing it, but I think it's these little buggers walking around, and that they've got some type of sense of humour trying to trip me out. And other times it's small, like, shadow men, not that tall, but I was even shown that some of them are the reptilians vibrating in and out, but it seems that we sort of pick up on anything, everything paranormal can happen to us.
Yeah, that's right. You get these little creatures as well, little things about that big, black, and you see them going around and that kind of stuff. They're kind of not solid, but they're...
I get the same thing.
Certainly dark, but it's almost like... They're almost like 2D.
Yes, yeah.
They don't seem to have any depth and stuff to them, yeah.
What do you feel they are?
I've noticed they hang around electrical things. They'll hang around televisions and radios and VCRs and all that kind of stuff, I've noticed. Yeah, I don't know what they are.
I had that type of thing. They weren't negative, but I had negative things around when they were around at the time. And this is when a lot of black ops and... Yeah, other, you could say, iconic reptilian-type stuff was happening. And I found out that there was a couple of other people going through the same thing, and it was like we were all being attacked on not just my lab level, but that level as well. But those things I didn't feel were good or bad, but they seemed to be around at that time. I actually had somebody in the UK asking me about, I forget what they called them, but like little critters. They said there was sort of like these spiders, and they're... and other people had brought it up too. They were sort of like these entities that were spiders that would appear, you know, like a being or whatever.
You're talking about those things Miles talks about, the scuttlers.
Yeah, I haven't noticed anything like that, but that was something new to me when somebody brought that up, and then I found it from a few sources like that had slightly different takes on it. Have you witnessed anything like that?
Yeah, I have seen those things, but not at home. I haven't seen those at home. I've seen them in other places. I've seen them in various other places. So I can't really sort of say one particular place. But the ones at home, no, they don't bother me at all. It's almost like they live with the electrical system.
Yeah,
they don't bother me, and but I just see them like whipping around. You know, they're like kind of. They got no features and not really got any shape, but like I said, they're like they're two dimensional. You know, they don't seem to have any depth. They just sort of whiz around where the electrics are, and I've seen them not only at home but at other places, but they never bother me. But yeah, I mean, I've seen all sorts inside and outside houses, etc., and in the street. I mean, that freaks you out when you're walking down the street. And you see a reptilian walking towards you, and sometimes you'll see a person walking like quite a long way away, and you're walking like towards them, and then they come around the corner, and they change, or else they'll cover like 500 yards in about a split second. You know, that kind of stuff goes on. You see, I see that ever such a lot, and I especially saw it in Sydney.
Yeah, actually, not too long ago, I was out town, and we're going out to Skywatch after we just dropped my mum off and her friend that came out before, and, you know, we had a lot of activity, and we've gone back out there, and what was projected to me as a Draco, like, these things were tall. I've seen reptilians that are a lot smaller, they're about my height, about 6 foot, mm-hmm. a little bit higher, and there was a small one, but this time, this thing was huge. But I got out of the car because I've got like a four-wheel drive and I've pulled up the back thing to get my infrared cameras out and all that. Mm-hmm. And something told me to turn around and there it was about 10 metres away and I had a friend with me and I was just like, get in the car, we're going. And we've got in the car and the car would not start and the lights in the roof, the lights on the dashboard and the lights outside were all going off at different times and I wasn't even touching anything because I tried to turn it, it wouldn't do it and the lights are going. I'm thinking, am I doing that? And I've let go. This happened for about 10, 20 seconds, and then the car started by itself, and I'm like, we're getting the hell out of here, and she can testify to everything like that. That's something that hadn't happened to me before, and it wasn't, I think it wasn't so scary. It was like, I've got to get the hell out of there. What scared me was I'm in the car trying to start, and it won't start, and the lights are all going off. That sort of freaked me out almost to the point I was going to scream like a little girl. But as you know, this stuff will happen. Like I was telling you about Mount Buffalo, how much activity was up, like up there. But as you know, and people just think, you know, it's a limited type thing. This stuff will happen anywhere, anytime, anyhow. It's just what's going to occur is going to occur. Yeah, you can see it walking, like you're saying, in Sydney. So you had a lot of stuff like that in Sydney happen.
Yeah, a lot. And I'll tell you one real hot spot that I found was, I think it's called the Macquarie Centre. So it's a big mall, shopping mall place.
Yeah.
And nearly every person in there that was walking around when I went there this particular time was a reptile. Now that sounds, I sound like a right wacko, I know, but they were. And I was rubbing my eyes, am I seeing things? But no, they just, yeah, full of them. Absolutely full of them it was. Yeah. Yeah, but no, then I saw it in the street and in the town, in the city, you know, around the harbour and Darling Harbour, everywhere, you know. It was loads of them in Sydney. Sydney's well popular for it.
Well, it's well set up for that too. The symbolism and crap going on there is just so, so well set up for it.
Yeah.
In my opinion, probably yours too, with the, you know, with everything that does go on there. Like, and I was blown out with the Olympics story you'll tell me with Kathy Freeman and the torch and everything there, and then we look again on New Year's. Wouldn't be surprised, you know, that doesn't blow me out because I've had some situations like that I have not talked about because I've thought, you know, it's still for me to absorb. Not that I wouldn't talk about it, but I've got to absorb it so I'm sort of okay just knowing it, but it's good to know I'm not the only one because to say what you just said, to me doesn't sound crazy. But
no,
until
it will to a lot of people, I know, but I don't really care, to be honest.
Yeah.
I know what I saw and I've got plenty of evidence for things that happened to me and you know, I don't need to convince myself. I already know, so I just accept it as being, that's the way consciousness fields work, you know, it's just that. Sometimes it's me decoding them as being what they are and seeing some of the, you know, aspects of those people. And other times I genuinely feel that I'm seeing the real thing and they're just disguising themselves as human beings. You know, I think there's a mixture of that. There's no cut and dried one at all.
Yeah, no, you continue to perceive things more and more, and that's where, you know, you can see the masking of what they are or what they really are, the different levels of it, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, we'll wrap it up there. Again, I'd love to have you back on in the future. I love talking to you. It's just absolutely fascinating, but again, I really appreciate you taking the time out to talk with me, and I think the listeners and the viewers, you know, we'll get something from this. And just for everyone, so everyone knows, I actually ripped the audio off the video as well. So if you can't afford watching the whole show on YouTube. You can actually download just an audio version. So there's a video version, audio version, just for everyone out there too. So, but Ellis, thank you. And I'd like to thank everyone who's been watching and supporting my website, myself. And, yeah, it's muchly appreciated. Anything you would like to say, Ellis?
Yeah, I'd just like to say well done, Pete, for what you're doing. I think you're doing valuable stuff, and also because you're somebody with their own experiences, you're very easy to share things with, you know. And yeah, it's nice to speak to a fellow traveller, mate.
Yeah, I know exactly. And,
I'd also like to say thank you to everybody who listens to this, and I hope you enjoy it. And yeah, it seems to have gone very quickly.
It has, yeah, an hour and a half just flew by like that. And yeah. I appreciate your words, mate. That does mean a lot. It does mean a lot. It's much appreciated.
No, you're welcome, mate. I mean it. And yeah, you take care of yourself, and lots of love to everybody who's listening, watching, or whatever, and also to all my subscribers, readers, and visitors to my website. So yeah, all the best, mate.
Thanks, mate. Thank you very much. And if you just want to go to all Ellis's sites and find his books and that, just go to the link that will be posted at the bottom of this video, or where you've downloaded the audio version of this, there'll be a link straight to all Ellis's stuff. So. Thanks, everyone, and thanks, Ellis, mate.
All the best, mate. See you later.
All right, take it easy, mate. See ya.